We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
And I'm here with you until 10 o'clock. We have a three-hour show tonight, and we took the show on the road. We are in Algonquin at the Iron Horse Bar and Grill, part of the Miller Lite Top Draft Series. Lance Briggs is going to join me inside the 7 o'clock hour. He will be here with me on site. We will talk about all sorts of stuff, although I have to admit I didn't do a great job of figuring out what we were going to talk about because we talked about a ton of bear stuff on Tuesday when we were together, but I will figure it out before he joins me around 7:40. I'm going to talk with Greg Gabriel, who used to be in charge of scouting for the Chicago Bears. We'll do that in the next segment at 7:20. At 9 o'clock, because Lance is going to be here with me from like 7:40 until 9. At 9 o'clock, I'm going to talk with Laura Oakman from Fox Sports. She was on the sidelines on Sunday as the Bears won the NFC North title, so I want to talk with her about what that experience was like. This hour is being brought to you by Builder Supply Outlet on Cermak Road in Broadview. I got a full house and a great crew tonight. Just talked with Joe, one of the owners here at Iron Horse, and later on I'm definitely going to have a burger because I saw them floating around and they look really, really good. Back at the ranch, Christopher Dickens and Adam Studzinski are in charge of the show. Ray is our engineer. Dylan and Matt are here from Score Promotions. A full boat. We got you covered. Okay. Let's talk about a couple things. There's a couple of Bears issues I want to get to, but I also want to talk about the rest of the pro teams in town before we get completely Bears-centric. So I want to start with talking about the Blackhawks and the Bulls, and then we'll make our way to Cubs, White Sox, and finish up with the Bears as we then get into Bears. I want to talk about Corey Crawford for a minute. I'm at the point now with Corey Crawford where I feel like he should just retire. Like, I just, after seeing him get the concussion earlier this week, it's not worth it. He doesn't really have anything left to accomplish in his career, and considering where the Blackhawks are at as a franchise right now, I'm not sure that it makes any sense for him to try to press himself or honestly just end up in another situation where he might have a concussion. Now, the game might just do it. Like, considering how long it took him to recover from the last concussion, which was about 10 months, maybe the game itself tells you, you know what, you're probably done playing professional hockey for the rest of your career. So the Blackhawks talked about this. Colleton talked about this earlier this week. Here's what he had to say about Corey Crawford.
He has a concussion, so he'll be under the protocol. Go from there.
The team seemed to change a little bit after he left. At least it might have been coincident. The five goals came afterwards. Do you find a correlation between maybe the team's compete level after that?
Could be. I'm not sure. Obviously, we had a good start, and then they turned it on.
You feel like Evander Kane could have done something differently on that play to avoid contact, or was it just a hard hockey play?
Yeah, I don't see that. Honestly, I haven't looked for that, and for me, the focus is on the goaltender. You know, he's hurt, so that's unfortunate.
Concerned are you for him right now, and how are his spirits?
Didn't talk to him, but of course we're concerned.
Did you get an update from a doctor as to how bad it could be?
I think a concussion is a concussion, so everyone's different. Every concussion is different. So we'll see.
And he would know because he dealt with those in his career when he was playing, and I think it was one of the things that kind of ended his career. So I just don't know if there's any redeeming reason for Corey Crawford to ever worry about playing hockey again. He's gone to the mountaintop. You know, he has been to Space Mountain. He has won a cup. He has been one of the major factors in winning a cup. I just want the guy to have a solid post-hockey life. So I'll leave it there, and we'll move on to the Bulls. The Bulls get some more bad news. Zach LaVine's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks, and now Bobby Portis will miss 2 to 4 weeks with a sprained ankle. I feel like every time we talk about the Bulls, someone's missing 2 to 4 weeks with something. Like, someone's got something, and all it does is delay whatever this iteration of rebuild is for the Bulls. It just is always like, oh, well, you know, once we get such and such back and healthy, then we'll have an idea of where we're at and what type of trades we might be able to make, or what type of free agents will end up being perfect for the guys that we have on the roster. And I swear, it's like every week, it's like, well, someone else is hurt. And this from just Cross from NBC Sports Chicago's Bulls Talk Twitter account. According to reports, the Knicks are interested in Jabari Parker. New York's leading scorer is hurt, and they are one of the more mid-range heavy offenses, which would be perfect for Jabari Parker. I was on the Scores Bulls podcast with Young Tony yesterday, and we were talking about how this whole thing has been a disaster. And I was actually a little bit encouraged by them signing Jabari Parker, but he clearly doesn't fit with what they want to do. And here's my question about that. How did you not know? Like, you have a couple years of tape on Jabari Parker kind of telling you what type of player he is, but you were somehow convinced by your sit down with him that he's a better fit than he actually was. And I don't understand how an executive worth his salt could do that. That you had in your mind that he was a great fit, and you had the tape to evaluate the player, and yet and still the player gets here and you're like, oh, this isn't what we're expecting. Well, that's a hell of an investment at $20 million. And I know they needed to get to a salary floor. That's a hell of an investment at $20 million to kind of take a guess. And for you to make the conclusion that he's not a part of what you're doing going forward this early in the season is a crazy indictment on what that franchise leadership has been over the long haul. It's the whole thing. Like, the more Tony and I talked about it yesterday, like the more upset I started to get about where the Bulls are at as a franchise. And that's another one of those things that they've done as a basketball franchise that just makes me uncomfortable. All right, let's talk a little baseball before we get to the Bears talk, and I promise you a little Bears talk in this segment. Pat Hughes, that's good news. Pat Hughes has signed a 2-year with an option extension to stick around to be the Cubs play-by-play guy, and I think that that's great. I love listening to Pat Hughes. I had the chance to work on some Cubs broadcasts this year, and I really just dig his whole vibe. He's very serious and very earnest about doing it. I think that he's locked in because you have the World Series win with his voice on it. But I just think that he's a great ambassador for the Cubs. And I'm appreciative of him being around. I think that he adds a lot of good to baseball in the city. The Cubs also had signed Daniel Descalso. They got some other issues with the Addison Russell stuff, like continuing to be around. I'm not sure how at the end of this you justify him being on your roster, considering some of the things that were said. Now, some of that is taken out of your hands. You know, he's not going to be on your team for 40 games because of the suspension, but it doesn't seem like, at least publicly, or public perception about Addison Russell is getting better. So a little bit of good and a little bit of the bad there with the Cubs. Move over to the White Sox. So they had their meetings with Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. And I've heard some people be like, well, Machado only met with the Yankees for 90 minutes, so that means that he's going to be a White Sox. Well, to add to that, Machado ended up having another meeting with the Yankees, went out to dinner with them, so it's more of like a two-day thing instead of the 10 hours that the White Sox had Manny Machado at their facility. Are you more or less confident that they're going to sign one or both of those guys than you were 2 weeks ago? See, because 2 weeks ago, it was all like, oh my goodness, the White Sox could really be in on this thing. They could be in on Bryce Harper. They seem like they're the front runner. And now you're like, oh, he went to go visit the Yankees, and the Yankees were in the playoffs last year, and they're a playoff team, and he could go and be a part of that again instead of at least sacrificing 1 year and being a part of a rebuild. I'm real curious if he does, if neither one of those guys signs with the White Sox, on how it's going to be spun. And let me just say this. If the White Sox have a chance at either Harper or Machado, they better be the team that offered the most money. If you think that your World Series history from 2005, being a charter member of the American League, is going to be enough, I would say you should do more. Make it overwhelming. If you really want Harper and or Machado, overwhelm them with what you will offer them. Or with an option. You know, maybe it isn't 10 years or in $350 million. Maybe it's, well, yeah, that's what the structure of the deal is, but we're going to give you $200 over five, and then you can opt out. And if you're unhappy, you can opt out at the end of that fifth year, and you'll only be, in Harper's case, 31, and you can strike gold again as a free agent. But don't let money be the thing that keeps you from getting Bryce Harper and or Manny Machado. All right, so I've dealt with the Blackhawks, the Bulls, the Cubs, the White Sox. Now let me talk about the happier story. And the happier story is your Chicago Bears. The fact that they have won the NFC North, that they exorcised demons this past weekend with their win against Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. I wanted you to hear this because I was listening to Matt Nagy's press conference earlier today, and I've enjoyed pretty much everything that he's been about since he got here. And I thought that Rich Campbell asked him a really good question today when he asked about the advice that Nagy got before he took the job.
Probably the biggest thing is what I told you guys maybe a week ago. For me is the relationship part. I didn't know how well I was gonna get to know everybody on the team in the first year. I think it's been a little bit of a surprise in a good way of how accepting the players have been towards me and being able to find out more about each guy. There's so many different things that I will be able to help guys out in my situation down the road logistically. But overall, big picture, I would say is – and then also, too, just a little thing but can become big is you can't worry about anything other than what you can control, you know. And that goes without said, but I think probably building relationships.
How cognizant have you been of the effort required to ask a guy something personal or just to make sure you're reminding yourself to do that on a regular basis?
It started at the beginning of the process for me when I got named head coach. There were some firings that we had to do. So the hirings are easy. The firings are the ones that are difficult because I have a soft spot in my heart for people. And I just think that when people have to go through tough times, I tend to do a lot of listening and talking and helping. And sometimes that's good, but at the same time, it's the business side too. And I just think that, that can be a challenging time. But for us, just building a culture and trying to do it with good people.
And I think that that's where Nagy succeeds as a coach is with the building of relationships. I think that that's been one of his biggest strengths, along with his creativity. And we live in an age where you can scheme wins in the NFL. And we saw that early on with Nagy, that he was doing that to Tampa Bay and But the fact that he has that level of self-awareness when it comes to how to build relationships, which I think was a failing of the two previous head coaches of the Bears, I think is a pretty amazing thing. And I think that it will serve him in the long term as being the head coach of this team. It's one of the more impressive traits about him as a head coach. All right, I'm going to take a break. When I come back, we're going to talk a little bit of X and O's. We'll talk a little bit about the roster. And I'm going to do that with Greg Gabriel of our staff, who used to be the scouting director for the Bears and worked in scouting departments for over 30 years. Lance Briggs is going to join me at some point. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and you're listening to The Score.
Listen to this crowd. Trubisky takes the snap, takes a knee. They head to the field. The Bears have won it 24-17 over the Green Bay Packers. And it's been an anguishing absence from the playoffs. 7 years, 11 months, 27 days. They go last to first, and they win the NFC North 2018 division champions for the first time since 2010. They're headed back to the playoffs.
Jeff Joniak on the call on our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. I am broadcasting the show live from the Iron Horse Bar and Grill out in Algonquin. It is the Miller Lite Top Draft Show. We spent the first segment going through all five of the professional teams in town and ending up on the Bears because they are going to be a focal point of the rest of the show. The resume for Greg Gabriel speaks for itself, but in case you don't know, 30 years in scouting in the NFL, 9 years as the scouting director for the Bears, writes for Pro Football Weekly Now, does an incredible job, one of our analysts at 670 The Score, and you can hear him on almost all of our football coverage, including my show from time to time. Follow Greg on Twitter at Greg Gabe. He's a great window into the way the world of scouting looks at today's NFL, and he joins me now here on The Score. Greg, thanks for coming on tonight.
Well, thanks for having me. How you doing?
I'm doing really well, man. I'm doing really well, so I'm glad to have you here. I want to start with this. From considering how long you worked for the Bears and you understanding the way that the organization works, I'd love to know, from an organizational standpoint, what did the Bears win Sunday mean to that organization?
Well, I think it starts right at the top, Lawrence, with ownership, and that, you know, they put a premium on the rivalry between the Bears and the Packers, obviously the longest rivalry or the oldest rivalry in the NFL. And so that's a game that there's a lot of pressure put on the front office and the coaches from ownership to win that game a majority of the times. And so from that standpoint, winning that game, especially after the way they lost the game in the season opener, I think was huge.
So what was it like for you when you were there and you guys were facing the Packers, just from a week-to-week basis, where maybe the week before you're playing, I don't know, the Texans, and then the week after you're going to play the Packers? What's that week like?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question, and I've talked about it a few times over the last couple weeks, and that, you know, when I first came here, you know, I came from New York. I was 17 years with the Giant organization, and any team that's in the NFC is a rival to the Giants. They're all big games because they're division games, and you obviously want to win the division. And you come to the NFC North in Chicago, and it's the same thing, but there's an extra impetus put on the Green Bay game. And having not been here, you don't really get it. When you're new here, I don't think you get it. You understand it at first. You got to spend some time here. And I think that can be the case with some of the players, too, as they become a Chicago Bear. You know, a new player, be he a vet or a rookie, I don't know if he understands the magnitude of the game. Now, they, you know, in some of the colleges, if they've been to Ohio State or USC, you got the USC Notre Dame game, Ohio State Michigan, Auburn Alabama. You have those big rivalries in college, but you don't always have them in pro sports. But this is one of them in the NFL, and I think that once you get acclimated to that the game is important as it is, then, you know, it becomes ingrained in you. And one guy I was talking to about this, you know, because I really wanted to get a feeling of how the veterans felt, being that, you know, veterans come and go, and same with the young players, was Olin. And Olin said, you know, again, when he first got here, it was another game. It was an important game. It was another game. He goes, when you start to spend some time here and you've got, you know, neighbors that are huge Bears fans, and they know how important the rivalry is, and you see that the hate, for lack of a better word, that the Bears fans have for Green Bay, he said, you really start to get into it, and it becomes really important to the players too.
Okay, so the win was huge for the Bears for a lot of reasons. I always felt like over the last few years that there was such a talent gap between where the Bears were and specifically where the Vikings and the Packers were. How did the Bears close ground and now, in Green Bay's case, pass up where the Packers are as far as talent goes?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with the master plan that Ryan Pace had. And I'm not sure that started when he first came here 3 years ago, but more as he grew into the job, knew that the relationship with John Fox as the head coach wasn't going to work. He had to go out and get his own guy. And then finding the players that he could put around a quarterback. He made the decision to draft the quarterback last year. Mitch Trubisky was the guy he wanted. And so then he went all in on that, and then bringing in an offensive-minded head coach and finding players between the draft and free agency last year to surround him with. Now, there already were some good players on defense. It was really getting players on the offensive side of the ball, thinking that the defense was going to be great. But obviously then the Khalil Mack trade came. You know, how often does a Pro Bowl, not even a Pro Bowl, an All-Pro potential Hall of Famer become available the week before the season? It just never happens in the National Football League. And he set his mind to going out and getting that player. He got him, and that's the difference maker for this team and helped turn this team around. One player can do that when you've got a lot of other pretty good parts, and he's the guy that helped put him over the top. And a lot of it was, I just think, the coaching, the change in attitude, change in chemistry with the coaching staff, and being able to relate to the players and installing a system and installing just an overall attitude that the players could really buy into.
Greg, from a strategic standpoint, what do you think has been Mac's impact for the Bears?
Sorry, I didn't hear the first part, Lawrence.
From a strategic standpoint, what do you think Mac's impact has been on this team?
Well, I think that, you know, as soon as he stepped in the door, you knew you had a great player, a difference-making type of player, and that's the one thing that the Bears didn't have on the defensive side of the ball. You know, all the years I spent in New York, we had, you know, some great defensive players, the first being Lawrence Taylor and then Michael Strahan, and guys like that can make a difference not only on the field but in the locker room. Because of their attitude, their competitive nature and their drive, and that becomes infectious in the locker room because, in essence, you're not only competing with players on the other team, but you're competing amongst yourselves trying to get better to become as good as that one player who is the key player on the team.
We're talking with Greg Gabriel, who was in the scouting department, ran the scouting department for the Bears for 9 years. He's one of our analysts here as we talk about the Bears. What do you think of the five guys who were selected to the Pro Bowl?
All very deserving. And, you know, you could have probably added Prince of Mukamara into that group, too, and he would have been deserving, but there's only so many guys that could go. Every team has players like Akeem Hicks last year, you know. Everybody felt that he had a Pro Bowl type of season, but he didn't get in. And you're going to find that, you know, with the Colts, they had the rookie linebacker, you know, Darius Leonard, who the Colts thought, and Darius thought, was a Pro Bowl player, but he didn't make it. But that actually helps them play that much better the following year. I thought Roquan Smith might have had an opportunity. It's a deep position in the league, but he had, for a guy that missed all training camp, what an outstanding season he had to be able to play like he has. And he doesn't make the wild plays. He just makes play after play after play. And, you know, you almost get to the point where you don't even notice him because he just is so consistently making plays down after down.
Yeah, it's been a good run of guys that have put themselves in a position to go to the Pro Bowl. I'd love to know what you think the biggest difference is Kyle Fuller 2016 versus Kyle Fuller 2017 and 18.
Well, part of it, I think, was just health, Lawrence. He wasn't, you know, he struggled some, wasn't completely healthy. I don't think he, from this is my personal point of view, I don't know if he was quite strong enough. He had to get stronger on top of having, you know, he had the knee problem and stuff, and confidence. And when you're not playing well, sometimes you can lose confidence. For whatever reason, he was able to turn around. Obviously, being in a contract year probably had something to do with it as far as motivation, personal motivation. But he stepped up to the plate, and he had success early in the season, and it just kept getting better. The nice thing you like, and this has really happened with a couple guys, happened with Akeem Hicks too, is that once they get paid, sometimes the players start to level off or even go downhill because they, you know, they hit the lottery with the new contract, and then you might not see that intensity. With those two guys, they've still shown improvement and gotten better, and that's a good thing to see, and that's good to have in the locker room because you know that the other players see that, and then they strive to be like those guys.
We both are probably on the same page when it comes to what Akeem Hicks did last year. I thought that he was deserving of going to the Pro Bowl last year. I think that he made an overwhelming case this year. Why is he so essential to what the Bears do defensively?
I don't want to call him a freak, but it might be the best word. He's such a good athlete for a guy that big and so strong. There was one game, and I don't remember who the particular opponent was, but he just showed time and time again in that one particular game how strong and powerful he was, where he was, you know, taking on double teams and literally holding back an opponent with just one arm. And when you see that kind of power and the way he can play, he's never off his feet. He's got great instincts. He can just dominate the line of scrimmage. Now, is he the best pass rusher in the league from the defensive tackle position? No. But I think when you look at his overall game, defense the run, rush the passer, pursuit, he's one of the top defensive linemen in the league. And it's just, you know, and he's still getting better. He's, you know, when you look at his background, you know, he only was at LSU a very short time, and then there was recruiting problems there. It caused him to leave. And he ends up playing up in Canada at a level that was probably equivalent to Division III or less in the United States. And so he had a long way to go in learning how to become a pro, learning the technique to be a good defensive lineman. And now in the last couple of years, actually since he's become a Bear and you've seen steady improvement, you're seeing really what he can be. And I still think because he's relatively young, you're still going to see more improvement going forward, at least for the next couple seasons.
Greg, I want to talk to you about a couple of young guys on the roster, and one of them is a Pro Bowl alternate in Roquan Smith. I feel like with the Mac trade and signing, the way that Akeem Hicks has played, that the year of Roquan Smith has been fairly quiet from our perspective. On the field, he's doing the work. He has a chance to break Brian Urlacher's rookie tackle record this year. He just seemed to get it. I'd love to know from a scouting perspective what things you saw from him at Georgia, and do they match what you're seeing now at the professional level?
Yeah, I'm not surprised by his play at all. Maybe if there's one thing that's surprising is his consistency, because a lot of times with rookies, you know, there's some up and down. And with him, there really hasn't been down. The arrow's just been steadily going up, and especially because he missed camp. And you know, I mentioned that just a little bit earlier. When you figure that into the equation, that he missed all of training camp and, you know, he misses the important work part of training camp because of the holdout. Then when he gets here, he has a slight hand pull, so he's still prevented, really. He's getting the mental reps, but he's not getting the physical reps. And then to see what he did once he's inserted in the lineup, I think that's amazing. But when you go back to watch him at Georgia last year, you know, he's the same type of player, making plays sideline to sideline. Even though he's not the biggest guy, he showed a lot of strength and toughness at the point of attack. Really good against the run, very good with his pass drops and coverage. I think he's got to play more man, or he's had to play more man this year than he ever saw at Georgia, and I think he struggled a little bit with that early in the year, but he's gotten a lot better, and you like to see that because you always, you know, with rookies, sometimes they hit a plateau, and then you don't know if they're going to continue going up or just stay at that plateaued level for a while. And in his case, he doesn't stay on the plateau very long. He quickly gets off and starts climbing the stairs again.
The other guy I want to talk to you about is James Daniels. This guy's 20 years old. And I admit, in the scouting process, I didn't know a lot about him. But the more that he's played, the more you see what they saw in him. And I was really impressed the job that he did along with the double teams against Aaron Donald a couple weeks ago. How did they know about this guy, and what is the ceiling on James Daniels?
Well, I mean, you go back to watching Iowa tape last year, and the tape was good. Very, very consistent. If he wasn't the best center in the draft, he was the second best center. There, you know, a guy from Ohio State was pretty good, too, and I think he went in the first round. And but his tape was good. Now, could he have been a first-round pick? Yeah, but there were some teams that had an issue with a knee. You know, exactly what that issue is, I don't know. And that caused him to slip a little bit from probably going somewhere between 25 and 32 to where he went, you know, just a little bit lower into the second round. But to me, what is, I'm not going to say amazing, but what is really good is that, you know, he played guard 1 year at Iowa, then he was a starter at center for 2 years, and how good he has, or how well he has made the switch back to the guard position at the professional level. That's not an easy thing to do. And when you're drafting a lineman, especially an interior guy, you want a guy that can, you know, when they're young players, to be able to play two positions, play center and guard. And the reason for that is that in most cases, you only dress seven linemen on Sunday. And so the two backups have to be able to play more than one position. And that was key in training camp, is that he could play center at a high level. He could play, and he was learning the guard position. And I think from the standpoint of the front office and the coaching staff, they didn't want to move Cody Whitehair because the arrow was going up with him at the center position. And why put him into a new position when, with a rookie, it's sometimes a little easier to do the switch right from the start. So now you've got, you know, two really solid guys to go with Kyle Long. If Kyle Long comes back this year, you know, playing on the inside. But I don't think we've really begun to see how good Daniels can be because of what you said. He's so young, you know, 21 years old. He's going to get a lot stronger. If he had a deficiency in this game, I think that part of that was just the sheer power. And you see that a lot with offensive linemen coming into the league because of the weight programs they have in college versus what you have in the NFL. And it just takes some time. A lot of times you start to see that big jump in their second year, but he has shown just huge improvement from the beginning of the season till now. And his play, especially against Donald, you know, going into the game, you're worried. Now, granted, he had help sometimes on both sides and with the back, but still he took him on one-on-one. And then if you want to grade out every play, he was the winner in that battle. And that's a rookie going against, you know, one of the best, if not the best defensive tackle in football.
One more thing before I let you go, Greg. What things are you worried about as the Bears travel west to take on the Niners?
The one thing, and I wrote about it, you know, I have to do a preview for each game for Pro Football Weekly, and that is there's been some games this year, we've all seen them, where the Bears were obvious favorites in those games, and they had letdowns and didn't win the game. Obviously, Miami was the first one. Giants was the second one. And, you know, had you won those games, these finals, you know, they'd be in a position where they'd be sitting on that bye and not have to go into these last two games to win. Now they do, and they still might not have a chance.
Greg, I appreciate the time and the information. I'm looking forward to hearing everything you have coming up for the rest of the weekend and as you preview the game on Sunday with Hub. Thanks a lot for joining me.
Lawrence, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
That's Greg Gabriel, who does a great job for us here at The Score, also writes for Pro Football Weekly, and you can follow him on Twitter at Greg Gabe. He's a fantastic follow. Lance Briggs is in the house. 55 is in the building.
Yes, yes.
We are going to take a break, let him get settled in, perhaps get him a beverage.
Ah, tasty one.
And then we'll come back and we'll talk some Bears football with him. We are at Iron Horse Bar and Grill in Algonquin. It's the Miller Lite Top Draft Show here on The Score.
Hey, what's up, Holmes?
The man is in the building. Lance Briggs is here. Favorite Iron Horse Bar and Grill.
Yeah.
Out in Algonquin. It's the Miller Lite Top Draft Show. We usually do it once a week, but I feel like there was like a week where there wasn't a show.
Right.
I think it was the Cubs playoff game.
Uh-huh.
So like we're making up shows as we go along because we want to take care of our friends over at Miller.
There's more demand too right now with the Bears.
Isn't that great?
Yes.
We talked a little bit about this on Tuesday, but are you still feeling it where people are getting excited about the idea of the Bears in the playoffs?
Yeah, because you know the Bears are, you know, when you turn on the TV, they're one of the teams that are most spoken about. You know, where are they going to land? Who are they going to play? You know, how far can they go? That's one of the common questions that are asked, and it's happening on all channels and in all wavelengths.
I've been thinking all day about, well, I need to make sure that I'm not redundant with the questions that I ask Lance because we just talked on Tuesday. So I actually have thought of a couple more that I wanted to ask you about the guys that made the Pro Bowl.
Okay.
Also put redundant on the list for Sunday.
Okay. So we'll put redundant.
We'll put that on the list.
That must we're going to, yes. Either use or see if Alex Brown can figure out what redundant means.
a fun game to play along now that we have kind of just stumbled upon on our football after show at NBC Sports Chicago is that occasionally during the week, Lance and I come up with polysyllabic words that we are going to feed Lance the word.
Yes.
And then he says it right on the show, and then we watch Alex's face when he doesn't know what the word means.
Yes, because he doesn't feel like it's necessary. What he'll say is, what does that mean? And when you say it means you do something over and over again, well, why do you have to say it like, why do you have to use redundant then? Just say you had to do it over and over.
Because we're trying to show off that fine education from the University of Arizona.
Right.
That's what we are trying to do.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
That's the did we just get this, like someone just get excited about Arizona here? That would be great.
None.
All right. So here's one of the questions I wanted to ask you.
Okay.
What's it like in the locker room when guys get named to the Pro Bowl? Like when I asked you about this on Tuesday, I was talking specifically about you.
Yeah.
I'm curious about how the rest of the guys feel when a particular guy makes the Pro Bowl or misses the Pro Bowl.
You know, leading up to it, a lot of your teammates will come up and they'll say, you know, you're definitely in. Like, you're a lock. They'll go around and talk about guys that are locks. You'll have conversations with your coaches, and the coaches will say, you know, you're definitely a lock this year for the Pro Bowl. You've got to be. And then when it's announced, you know, nowadays we find out day before, a lot of times but you know, back then, you would find out the coach would bring everybody up, and he would tell everybody who made the Pro Bowl, who are the first alternates, things like that. So if you didn't get it and everybody thought you were a lock, you know, that's when guys come up, kind of console you, this and that. And that's kind of the gist of it.
Okay, well, it's good that because they had so many guys. Like, you get 12 dudes. You got five guys that are in, and then seven guys who are alternates. Mm-hmm. It must have been a big old party in that locker room.
It is because, you know, you think about a lot of those Pro Bowlers are going to come from teams that are probably going to play in the Super Bowl. You know, so if the Bears don't make it to the Super Bowl, there's a good chance that a lot of those seven guys or a majority of those seven guys can end up going, getting into the Pro Bowl.
Okay, the other thing that I was dying to ask you because, you know, usually Monday, Tuesday, we're talking about the game that happened.
Okay.
And Wednesday, you turn the page and you get on to the next opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And
first, second down.
Considering that George Kittle is the biggest offensive threat for the 49ers, he's played really well at tight end this year. He's going to the Pro Bowl. I figured I would talk with a guy who understands dealing with tight ends.
That's fine.
So what would you suggest the Bears try and do from a coverage standpoint to stop George Kittle?
If they're not a team that is going to that can threaten you in the pass game or you don't feel like they can threaten you, you know, you can probably look toward running man. And if you're going to run man, you just cover him up. You know, wherever he is, you cover him up and you jam him off the line of scrimmage. You know, you make it a rough day for him. You know, by the time he gets open, you've already spent, you know, 3-4 seconds. So now he's probably not even worth a target. You've nullified him from the pass routes. That's one idea. You know, make sure you get reroutes. Make sure you, you know, in zone, make sure you get reroutes. Make sure you get your hands on him. And again, like I said, make it a rough day for him.
What was your philosophy on how to get a good reroute on a tight end?
my philosophy on it is to stay balanced on your feet, but put your body in front of his body as long as you possibly can. And don't overextend yourself, because when you overextend, you know, your tight ends will be able to pull you and you'll run right by you. Don't sit too far back on your feet. Just stay balanced. You stay balanced and you just – you know, mirror where he goes. You know, you mirror where he goes. And by the time, you know, he's at some point fought his way, you know, from around you, the play is pretty much dead. You know, and tight ends get really frustrated when they can't get by you or somebody's nagging in front of you. What they want you to do is they want you to step to one side or another to give them a free release. Once they can get that release, that's what they're looking for, to get the release, then the timing's on point. If the timing's on point, then they know where the ball's going to be there when they make that turn or they turn back to look for a ball.
How important is the shot that you deliver as the ball is snapped? Is that important, or is it making him run the bubble that's more important?
Oh, it's your smarts, you know. Do you punch hard on the first one? Do you fake it on the first one? Do you sit back and let him come out to you? You know, a lot of times on the first release, I would get a really good jam where I would punch, boom, and, you know, kind of stifle him a bit. And then the second one, you know, I would fake it, and he'd do all kind of moves, you know, and pretty much reroute himself. And then once he's done it, then I'll place my hand on him. You know, the third time, he doesn't know what's coming. You know, I could come down hard. I can sit back. You know, but at that point, I know I'm in his head.
Who were the tight ends that were difficult for you to deal with?
Oh, man. The tougher ones were when I was younger, because when I was younger, you know, I was a rookie. I overextended, you know. So I remember one against, I think, Fred Jackson when he's playing for the Arizona Cardinals. And I was sitting down, and I knew it was a pass. And I was like, I'm going to get the best jam ever. You know, as soon as the ball was snapped, I lunged out. He grabbed me, threw me on the ground, and ran a corner route. So I got up, of course, you know, and I'm running my butt off trying to catch him, you know. And he catches it, of course, for like 20 yards, and I tackle him. But that happened a lot in my rookie year, where after that I was like, you know what, I have to change how I'm doing this and sit back on my feet. So, you know, he was always good. Jason Witten's a smart guy. Tony Gonzalez. Tony Gonzalez was always smart, because Tony Gonzalez would cut his routes down. You know, if it was a 5-yard route, he'd run it at 3. You know, if it was a 10-yard route, he'd cut it at 7. You know, so, you know, it was different, because I felt like he got to play by his own rules. you know, and that, of course, would make him open a lot more than probably other guys, but he wouldn't get the first down or he would be really short, but it was a completion.
So if you're sitting in the room watching film with Roquan,
yes,
what things would you tell him to do or to make sure of so that he doesn't end up in a situation like you did?
Well, he's athletic and he's got good speed. So for him, stay balanced. You know, I always say that, stay under your feet, and don't overextend yourself, but put your body in front of his, because it's going to be difficult for him, because he's going to try to get he's got a target where his route's supposed to go. And if you move to the side to the left or move to the side to the right, that frees up a lane for him to move to the side and then get back into his lane. If you stay in front of him, now he has to go all the way around you. He has to find a way to go around you, because if he goes through you, it's going to cost him. So keep your body in between him and where he's trying to go.
Since the 49ers don't really have a vertical threat, I mean, Pettis is okay, like, as a receiver. He's done some nice things so far this
dropped
year.
Dropped him from fantasy.
You dropped him?
Dropped him.
But since they don't really have that,
right,
I'm wondering what type of personnel they're going to use. Like, in my mind, it's a triple tight end set with Pettis split out wide with one back.
Boots.
So if they do that, how does that change the Bears personnel?
I mean, you might bring in another safety. You might bring, you have plenty of linebackers there. You just tighten down. You batten down. Yeah, they're running a 3-4, so you know, they have the personnel with the linebackers, you know, with the linebackers and the DNs that they're using. So it's just about, you know, them being stout at the point of attack. You know, if they tighten down, you're going to need to tighten down. So, I mean, it's no difference than – not a lot different than being, you know, near the goal line and them having that type of personnel. We have personnel that matches that personnel.
This feels like if I'm trying to look at it from the perspective of the 49ers, if I'm going to win, it has to be like an ugly fist fight. Like, I don't think that you're going to be up and down.
Well, you got to look at it from this way. You got to look at it this way, too. Are they sitting in that room and they saying, okay, do we believe that the Bears offense right now is a threat to score a ton of points on us? Right now, if we play good defense, do we think the Bears offense is going to score a ton of points? You know, no. All right. My thought process is, if we give the ball away, you know, or if we create opportunities for this defense will score on us. And that will put us in a position where we're playing from behind. So the best thing we can do is run this ball, protect it, and control the clock. So that we create a situation where we can possibly have a winning opportunity at the end of the game.
You're trying to steal one at the end, like keep it close and try to steal one,
right,
especially being at home. Top of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Start the holidays with the Chicago Wolves, led by the league's top scorer, Brandon Peary. The Wolves boast the AHL's highest-powered offense. Join the Wolves Friday at Allstate Arena for the inaugural Craft Beer Arena Crawl. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. More with Lance Briggs coming up. I want to talk to him about what the Bears might look like without Eddie Jackson playing safety. We are at the Iron Horse Bar and Grill out in Algonquin. It's the Miller Lite Top Draft Show. The room is packed, the food is great, and the beer is cold. Back after this on The Score. Rick.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.